It's Friday, the 12th of June, and I've had the papers and the headlines spread out in front of me since before dawn. There's a single question humming underneath almost everything I read this morning, and it's an old one wearing new clothes. What happens to human work when the machines get good at it? Some of today's stories answer it with money, some with policy, and one with the quiet plumbing that will decide whether any of it comes true. Pour something warm. Let me walk you through four of them. First up, the largest single bet of the day, and maybe of the year. Jeff Bezos has co-founded a company called Prometheus, and overnight it announced that it raised $12 billion at a valuation of $41 billion. That is one of the biggest financings a private company has ever pulled together in a single round, and the money came from Bezos himself, alongside JP Morgan, Goldman Sachs, BlackRock, and a whole roster of institutions. His co-founder is Vic Bajaj, who helped start Verily, Google's life sciences arm, and that pairing tells you something about where this is aimed. What they say they're building is what they call an artificial general engineer. Not a chatbot, not a coding assistant, but software that can design and manufacture complex physical things, everything from jet engines to drug compounds. And I want you to notice how sharply that cuts against the grain of the moment. Almost all the capital in this cycle has flowed toward language and code, toward assistants that live on a screen and the data centers that serve them. Prometheus is wagering that the harder and more valuable problem is the physical world. The geometry, the materials, the tolerances, the manufacturing constraints that a model trained only on text has simply never seen. Bezos has said a large share of the money will go straight into compute, which is the one way this looks like every other lab right now. But here's the part that stayed with me, and it's the thread that runs through the whole morning. Bezos told CNBC that he expects all of this automation to produce what he calls labor scarcity, a world where the demand for human workers actually outpaces the supply rather than the mass unemployment that many of his peers are bracing for. That puts him openly at odds with a lot of voices in this industry, and it is not an abstract disagreement. If automation creates scarcity, the urgent job is training people and matching them to new demand. If it creates displacement, the urgent job is catching the people who fall. Hold on to that fault line, because in a moment, two more of today's stories land on opposite sides of it. Moving on to our second story, which is about what happens when the company selling the shovels starts digging its own mines. Reporting from The Information this week describes a growing friction between Anthropic and the very companies that build their products on top of Claude. The flashpoint was a tool called Claude Design, which Anthropic revealed back in April for generating designs and application prototypes. In the weeks before that launch, Anthropic had asked firms like Figma and Canva, longtime customers, to stand on stage as partners to show how their products and Claude complement each other. Both initially saw it as an opportunity. Then, just days before the launch, Figma quietly pulled out of the talks. And right around the same time, Anthropic's chief product officer, Mike Krieger, stepped off Figma's board. Now, on its own, one awkward product launch is just gossip, but the people I'd trust on this read it as something structural. It is an old pattern in technology. The platform that controls a critical input gradually swallows the layer of applications built on top of it. And if you are a startup whose entire product is a thin wrapper around Claude, that pattern is existential. If the model maker can ship your feature natively with lower latency, lower cost, and privileged access to the model's own internals, then the thing that made you special gets very thin, very fast. The cost to Anthropic isn't free either. The whole reason a developer or an enterprise makes a multi-year bet on a platform is the assumption that the platform won't turn around and compete with them. Every episode like this raises the discount everyone applies to that assumption, and it hands rival model providers a clean sales pitch. Come build with someone who will stay in their lane. What makes this worth your attention is that it is not isolated. It sits inside a remarkably busy week for Anthropic, an enterprise alliance, its first data center leases, a major workforce program, a company expanding on every axis at once and quietly paying the strategic price of moving that fast. third up, and staying with Anthropic, because this is the other side of that same expansion, and it lands squarely back on the labor question Bezos raised. Anthropic announced a program it is calling Claude Core, and it is committing an initial $150 million to it. The idea is a national fellowship. Take 1,000 people early in their careers, teach them to use Claude well, place them full-time and in-person inside American nonprofits for a year, and pay them to help those organizations actually adopt the technology. And the premise is striking because it is almost the mirror image of Bezos's optimism. Anthropic's stated reasoning is that transformative artificial intelligence may deliver its benefits at the cost of real disruption, and that the companies building it have a responsibility to invest directly in the workers absorbing that change. So where Bezos sees labor scarcity, Anthropic is spending $150 million on the assumption of labor disruption serious enough to require intervention. Both of them cannot be fully right, and that gap is exactly the question the next decade of policy has to answer. The details are concrete enough to take seriously. It is run as a partnership. Anthropic funds it and brings the Claude expertise. An education nonprofit called CodePath becomes the fellow's actual employer and runs the training, and a group called Social Finance handles measurement and is tasked with building a financial vehicle to let the thing scale. Each fellowship runs 12 months. Fellows earn $85,000 plus benefits, get intensive upfront training, 5 hours of continuing instruction every week, a mentor, and a generous Claude budget. At least 400 nonprofits are lined up to host them: food banks, veteran groups, conservation outfits, humanitarian organizations. Anthropic says it wants to open source the infrastructure that makes the program run, so others can copy it, and it is openly hoping this grows into something national in scale. The honest open question is whether 1,000 fellowships is even large enough to register against a labor market this size, or whether it is a pilot meant to prove a model that someone, eventually, builds much bigger. And for our fourth and final story today, let's leave the money and the policy behind and go down into the machine room, because a cluster of research papers landed this week that I think matters more than any single one of them would on its own. The theme is something researchers are now calling environment engineering, and to explain why it matters, I need to back up one step. For about 2 years, the lever everyone pulled to make systems better was the model. Make it bigger, train it longer, tune it harder. But for agents, the systems that take actions, use tools, and work over long horizons, a different bottleneck has been creeping into view. It is not the model anymore. It is the environment, the world the agent acts in, the tools it can reach, the constraints it lives under, and the feedback it gets back. This week, a survey pulled that idea together and gave it a name, laying out how you model these environments, how you generate them at scale, and how you evaluate them. And several concrete papers made the abstract case land. My favorite is one called Evo Arena, which points out that almost every test we run on agents assumes the world stands still and the real world never does. So they built environments that change over time, across terminals, software, and social settings, and then measured how today's agents cope. The answer is humbling. Current agents score, on average, just under 40%. They paired it with a memory scheme that records how the environment itself has evolved, so the agent can reason about change rather than being blindsided by it. Other work this week pushed the same idea into autonomous science, into generating whole software repositories from a single specification, and into a framework called Arbor that treats long-horizon research as a growing tree of hypotheses, evidence, and distilled lessons. Here's why I put this beside the money stories instead of off in a corner. The entire point of building better environments is to produce agents that can reliably do real work, which means this quiet, unglamorous research is the substrate underneath the whole loud argument about labor. The capability that everyone is pricing and legislating and funding gets built. In the end, right here, in how carefully we construct the little worlds these agents learn inside of. So that's the morning. Step back, and the four pieces tell one story from four different heights. a founder betting $12 billion that the machines will leave us short of workers, not short of jobs, a model company so eager to grow that it is bruising the partners it grew up with. That same company spending $150 million on the opposite bet that the disruption is real and someone has to catch the people it moves. And underneath all of it, a handful of researchers quietly building the training grounds that will decide whether any agent can actually do the work we are all arguing about. Money, friction, conscience, and plumbing. The full digest has the rest, the chips and the data centers, the smaller papers, the defense moves I couldn't fit in here. For now, take care of yourself, and I'll see you tomorrow.